Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and...
I got it right. I have to say Tuesday, otherwise I'll say Monday a million times. Welcome to a, at the moment, Kristenless Tuesday edition of Point Taken. She's on assignment, so to speak. So we will see if she will join us at some point or tomorrow or perhaps next week. We'll see. We'll see. She's got some responsibilities she has to take care of. So everything's well, so don't worry about her. And we always miss Kristen when she's not here. All right, so give you a sort of a quick review of what we're going to talk about today. Well, it was Memorial Day yesterday. I hope you had a two things. I hope you celebrated the men and women who allowed you to have that great day yesterday. That's the number one. And then if you looked at our newsletter this weekend, we certainly gave you the opportunities where people had parades and gatherings and memorials. So that was part of it. And then, two, just we were in southeastern Wisconsin. We were rewarded with a brilliantly awesome day yesterday. High temps, a lot of sun, for the most part, low wind. So it was a great, great day. And so that's where we've been. Coming up in about 5 minutes or so, Charles Franklin, director of the MU Law School poll. And I don't want to say I was right, but I was right. Apparently Wisconsinites are angry, are upset about the fact that they didn't get that tax relief bill done at the state legislature. So we'll talk to Charles Franklin about his recent polling, special polling on that. And at 10:35, this is one I've wanted to do, and I didn't wait till Kristen was gone, but I think this is something that I've wanted to scold parents for a while, and I know parents are up there, shut up, don't tell us how to parent. I'm telling you how to parent. Get your teens to work, and I'll tell you why that matters, the trending in the wrong direction, and why you can establish lifelong sort of skill sets and ethics about work, getting to work, waking up for work, doing a job that needs to be done, doing a hard job, doing a not a fun job, just to get into the work experience, and why all those things matter. We'll do that at 10:35. And a lot more on today's program, but I just want to make a quick comment about Memorial Day. So we've done a lot of shows recently, Kristen and I, about the challenges of our economy, and we'll have Dave Spano on at 11:08 to talk about that. And I think for me, just an observation, anecdotal or whatever term you want to use, driving around. So I did a lot of moving around over the week, not far, but to nurseries, Tehan's and Milliger's and Menards, because I was getting my greenhouses planted and all my pots, flowers all planted and all our landscape done. And it seemed quieter to me. And if you were out and about, I wonder if you noticed that as well. It was still busy because people were off and they were doing many of the same things I was doing. Tehan's was busy and Milliger's busy. Menard's not that busy though. And I wonder if people were reflecting what has been a challenging economy in the fact that on this Memorial Day, they were just sort of hanging out. I could smell cookouts across my neighborhood, which is a good thing. Neighbors enjoying each other's company in some cases, and God, the smells were amazing. My neighbor Russ cooking his chicken and everything else he puts on the grill, and he's a charcoal guy, so that was amazing. It just was, I think, a way that I noticed that maybe, just maybe, people are sort of sticking around, and we'll see, and we'll probably talk to Dave about this as well, what it does to the airline industry. And we know Spirit's gone now, and that low price option is gone now, so maybe that trimmed that sector of the travel industry. Curious times, and whether people believe that the economy is struggling or not, obviously the markets have been looking the other way, hitting 50,000 and for the most part up for the year across the markets. NASDAQ and S&P and the Dow. So those things seem to be solidly in check and showing growth. So it's sort of a mixed bag for the economy. We'll get to all that with Dave. And then our friend from City Forward Collective, Kelsey Morgan, will join us at 11:35 on education and the link between that story and the failed tax relief bill. So a busy show on a Christianless Tuesday. After the break, he is the guy from the MU Law School poll. Some interesting numbers on that subject, tax relief, the economy, from the guy from Marquette. Charles Franklin will join us after this on 620 WTMJ. Venture a highway. Maybe less people taking the highways this past weekend. Long weekend for Memorial Day. Joining us on the hotline is one of the smartest guys I know, Charles Franklin, director of the MU Law School poll. And Charles, first of all, welcome.
Good to be here.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a sort of a process question. Do you typically do one of these instant reaction polls, if that's what it is? I mean, on May 11th, they announced an agreement, Governor Tony Evers, Republican legislature, on the a tax relief bill. And then after that got shot down, you've done polling now that suggests, voters look at it a little bit differently than the perhaps the legislature does. Do you do those types of polls that often?
No, we don't do them very often. I thought this was a surprising outcome to this bill. And we now have the technology that we can react a little more quickly than we could in the past. And so it was an opportunity to find out what voters think about this, because, as you say, this bill appeared on Monday and it was defeated on Wednesday.
Yeah,
we really didn't have a whole lot of time for discussion or for the public to weigh in on what they thought about it. So given that we're able to do a poll more quickly than our usual polling, which does take more time and still takes more time, I thought this was a good opportunity to see what the public really thought about this.
It is an interesting time because, you know, I've had extensive conversations on the show about what the voters think about all this. And this is, you know, real life, real time. And in like a 10 days later, you have the numbers, less than 10 days. It is surprising to me, and I'm curious the numbers that you'll relate to our audience, that on this one, a lot of consensus between Republicans, Democrats, Independents on what the legislature should have done, right?
Yes, incredibly little partisan difference. You know, we're such a divided state on so many things, but to see almost no difference between Republicans, Independents, or Democrats on whether the bill should have been passed or should have been defeated is really quite remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, look at the numbers, 77% of Republicans, Independents 81%, Democrats 82% for, I think, a round number of 80% on the averaging there. That's a big number whenever you're talking about any issue that revolves around politics in Wisconsin.
It certainly is. And 80% favored the bill passing, only 11% were opposed, and 9% said they didn't know what they thought of the bill. but I think partly it's a matter of the speed with which the bill came together. People didn't have much time to go to partisan corners. I think it's also a matter of this bill had a lot of things for a lot of people. It had both some reductions in property taxes and more spending for special education and rebate checks directly to voters. Didn't get as much attention, but it also eliminated taxes on tips and overtime. So it's the kind of compromise in which nobody gets everything they wanted and everybody gets something that they wanted. And I think we saw in the legislature that willingness to compromise is somewhat more limited in the legislature, or at least in the state Senate. But among voters, that compromise was very appealing.
You know, the other thing that you asked I thought was really interesting is the wait till next year question. That also suggested that people weren't real happy with the let's get around to it, maybe with the new members of legislature, new makeup, new leadership. That wasn't a good answer for the voters either.
I think that's right. We found that we explained in the question that some people have argued that the bill was fiscally irresponsible for spending a projected surplus that might not be here later. And then we asked, having explained that, would it be better to delay it or better to pass it right now? 69% said pass it now. Only 21% wanted to delay till next year. And again, almost no partisan difference. 68% of Republicans said pass it now, 67% of independents, and 74% of Democrats. So while opponents have raised this issue of the uncertainties of the budget, and the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has subsequently issued a report saying there is the potential for a shortfall if this had gone through. Voters were not moved very much by that. Going from 80% support to 69% support means even when you present those financial uncertainties, only lowered support for the bill by 11%. And still bipartisan support of over two-thirds.
Charles Franklin, director of the MU Law School poll, joining us on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. You asked the third piece of this story as well. Would that have political impact come November? What do those numbers show?
Well, 25% said this would be very important for how they vote in November. There's 23 for Republicans, 27 for independents, 25 for Democrats. So, it's, again, not much difference. Now, I caution that November is still a ways off. Lots of issues will come up during the fall. I think we can be sure that property taxes and school spending will be big issues in the governor's campaign. So that people will be reminded of these issues, even if they're not specifically focused on this vote. I think one of the issues for the fall, though, is that several of the Democratic candidates for governor were opposed to the bill. And, of course, all Democratic state senators voted against the bill. But Tom Tiffany, running for governor, Republican, also said he would not vote for the bill if he were governor. But we asked people about that, and only 19% said that they thought the Democrats were doing the right thing to oppose it. Only 18% thought Tiffany was doing the right thing to oppose it. But 65% said Governor Evers was doing the right thing to support it. And so you see there the dilemma for the fall candidates. Those potential gubernatorial candidates took a position that a lot of people don't agree with, whereas almost two-thirds agree with Evers' support for the bill.
Can you step out of the polling side and make a connection between what I was talking about before you came on, which is a little bit of uncertainty about budgets, family budgets, household budgets, discretionary income? Can you make that connection with these kinds of numbers, this kind of support for getting something done in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think we see in our Wisconsin polling that people are very concerned about inflation and the cost of living. It's the number one most important problem in every poll we've done since 2022, really. That is still very much there. There's also a growing concern with property taxes. That's gone up. The concern about property taxes has gone up substantially over the last few years. But at the same time, there's concern about funding for education. So you can see the arguments on both sides here, and voters are concerned about them in that way, and they're concerned about their own budgets, as well as some concern, but I think less concern about what the state's budget looks like in the future.
And Charles, quick look ahead. What's your next round of polling going to show us or tell us?
Well, we'll be back in July with the pre-primary gubernatorial poll. We've studied these things in primaries for a long time now, and we've really found that voters tune in late June and in July. So when we're back in the field in July and releasing that poll in mid-July, I think voters will be a lot more firm in their views, whereas we were seeing huge percentages undecided in our latest poll in March on the governor's race. People are paying attention now. They're going to pay more attention over the next 2 months.
Charles Franklin, director of the MU Law School poll. Thanks for joining us, Charles. I always appreciate you sharing your wisdom.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Quick break here on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. So please believe in me. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you had a great three-day weekend. Kristen, it will be back. When she's back, she's busy. She's on assignment, doing some stuff. Just tease ahead a little bit after the break. I know I get scolded when I tell parents what to do, but I don't tell parents what to do when it comes to getting their teens working. It's a great example, great life lesson to work when you're a teenager. And I'm actually going to reach out to, over the air, to vendors who are hiring and say, are you hiring teenagers? Let's go. Find out. Real life, real time, what's actually possible in this part of the state. So we'll do some of that as well. Real quick on Charles Franklin polling. Gold standard polling in Wisconsin. As he said, he'll tell us what the primary voters are thinking about in July. But this one was narrow focused on the reaction to what the state legislature and the governor didn't do, which was get a tax relief bill done. And I said it at the time when that went down, just a couple days after they said it was going to happen, Tony Evers and Devin LeMahieu and Robin Voss. Voters remember this stuff. And I was told by Joseph Pecky, strategist on the Democratic side, nah, they're not going to. Kristen even said some of that. And I said, I don't think so. And Bill McCosh was right. Voters weren't happy about it. And when you see the consistency across the board, Republicans, independents, Democrats, saying basically 4 out of 5, 80% roughly. Not roughly, that's the number if you average the 3. You should have got this done, and at least 25% will remember, and another big chunk will say might remember. That's a message to the candidates. You screwed up, you messed up, you didn't get it done. When you had a chance, and this is the one point I made then, and I'll make it again today, you had a chance to actually do something in your jobs. And you chose the politically expedient way, especially with those candidates, Tom Tiffany and a few others, not Missy Hughes, who was on point and on the right side of this. That's a lesson in getting stuff done. That's what you're there for. Not the yak, not the run for office all the time, to get stuff done. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. All right, parents, this is where I scold you, but I do it in a nice way. I was a parent, 2 lovely daughters, now adults, with kids of their own. I was also a guy who, at the age of 12, was already delivering papers, working on Mon's farm in Oak Creek, picking stuff, hauling dirt, you know, doing real work. And I was intrigued when I saw something on the Morning Brew newsletter this morning. And that has to do with teen workers in our workforce. And just give you some numbers. In 2024, so 2 years ago, summer 2 years ago, over 1 million teens got jobs just for summer. They're off of school. Their schedule slows down. This year, expected number, 200,000 plus, almost 300,000 plus less will be working this summer. So that's just the data. That's the hard numbers. You know, some of it's AI, right? They got French fries machines that are driven by AI right now. My generation has to take some of the heat here because older workers, some because they have to because they're on fixed incomes, have to go back. I just was at a restaurant the other day and it's rare for, you know, an employee of a restaurant to be older than me, but that was the case. Which is not a bad thing. If you want to work, work. There's also the leisure impact, right? You know, the fun stuff, the theme parks, hotels, outdoor activities. That's also down 70%. You know, inflation's part of that. The uncertainty about the economy. We'll talk to Dave Spano about that. Sort of the juxtaposition of people wanting to do stuff, but also the hard reality that they may not have the money or the disposable income they used to have. So I spent a little time looking at, and I'll give you my sort of anecdotal experience about working at a very young age. And I'm 67, so do the math. I started at 12. I didn't start working until I was probably 16 full-time in the summers. And then I worked full-time in college while I went to college at UWM throughout that experience, which I also encourage people to do. I know college is hard, but gives you a lot of more freedom when you can actually make your own money as you're learning. Not everybody can do it. I understand. So skill sets of the workplace for a teenager. Communication is the one that I see as the biggest asset because so many teens, they live on social media. That's their whole world. They text, they do all that stuff. The TikTok videos, you know, not bashing TikTok or all that, but less real life than actually doing a job where you're actually talking to peers or customers. The other part that's really, I think, undervalued or appreciated is teamwork. You're working with people of all age groups, right? From other teens to young adults to middle-aged people, some seniors. Here's another one, time management. How do I juggle my schedule? I can do these things, the fun stuff that I want to do in summer, but also spend a couple hours working at a restaurant, working at a Menards or whatever it is. But here's another big one. And I wanted to run through these because I think this is where we're missing something. Problem solving. I'm presented with a problem. A customer asks me something. I have to solve that problem, whether it's where is this to, what do you think about this? Is this the right tool if you're working at a, you know, Home Depot or Menards or Lowe's? How you approach the job from your schedule. Again, waking up for a job if you work early. Not every teen wants to do that, but here's the cool thing. You don't have to. Maintaining a positive attitude. Understanding boundaries, personal, professional, ethics. And as much as people say our kids are already overscheduled, sports is not the same thing as a job. Yes, there's a schedule. Understood. And there's practices and there's games. And if you're in tournaments or traveling team, it just goes on and on and on. That is a full-time job for a lot of kids during the summer. And God bless you if that's your thing. But at some point, we're missing something here. And if we're going to talk about needing jobs filled, the teen experience has to be part of that. Learning something. I had jobs in the food store industry. I was a bartender later in my teens. You just learn many of the skills you need to make life work. Now, here's what I want to ask, because we have a lot of people listening to the show. If you're an employer of any sort that hires teens, what kind of jobs are you trying to fill? I'm just curious. 855-616-1620. What's the shortest shift a teen could work? 2 hours? 3 hours? 4 hours? Because that's also part of the equation, right? You have to fit it into your summer fun. Kids work hard during the school year, hopefully, and vacations, and just sort of de-stressing and relaxing as part of the summer school or the summer experience, unless you're going to summer school. 855-616-1620. I don't want to lecture parents, but at some point we need teens to work. And just like, and I mentioned this with Kristen last week, the mistake that was made, and I say this with all sincerity, putting young adults under their parents' insurance to the age of 26 was not a smart idea. One, it adds debt. Two, it doesn't, for lack of a better phrase, push kids out of the nest. It allows them to hang out. It allows them to develop poor life skills. Waking up when you want to. Not all, but some. And I think there's an opportunity in the teen workers to sort of shift. Not easy, but at some point, parents and teens could say, you know what? Maybe some of these skills would translate to whenever you are an adult and you need to get a full-time job. You've already got communication, teamwork, time management, responsibility, problem solving, professionalism, even the digital world. That's part of workplaces now. That might be the key to making smarter, better, happier, more efficient adults. What do you think? 855-616-1620. Quick break. Thanks for tuning in on this Tuesday edition of Point Taken. Kristen is on assignment. Hopefully back tomorrow. So I think when we're talking about teen employment, for me, it's a life lesson. So I mentioned the stuff that I did, and I'm getting tons of texts about dishwasher, meat packer, roofer, referee, college intern at a chemical company. Someone disagreed with me on the insurance thing. Being on my dad's insurance until 26 helped me pay down my student loans faster. I get the impact. I have no problem with that if you're actually getting out of the house and working. If you're a basement dweller who's playing video games and spends all their time on social media and sleeping till 1 in the afternoon, I got a problem with it. I think when we look at some of the things that ail us as a country, we have restaurants that are now closing at 2, and that's the norm because they can't get workers at nights when, frankly, early evening kids would be available. Texter says that they've seen fast food workers have shifts as little as 2 hours, 3 hours. I seem like any kid should be able to do that. From the 414, my son had to get a job when he started driving. I said he could borrow the car, but I wouldn't pay for the gas. He's 40 now and has a strong work ethic to this day. If we want to reshape kids' behavior, this is the stuff you have to do. And look, parents, I get the scolding emails after I have a conversation like this on the radio. I'll just parent and you just shut the hell up. And I, you know, thanks for the feedback, but one of the points of having a talk show is to sort of express concerns of our society and sort of try to find, at least on my show, try to find solutions. I don't like to just bitch and then rant and rave and then go to a commercial. We try to find solutions here. One of the reasons I had Charles Franklin on earlier is I was told no one would care about that action by the legislature, but here, lo and behold, 80% of the public does. From the 262, 90% of kids will rise to expectations. I totally believe that. This is a teacher telling me this. 40-year career teacher. Thanks for the service, by the way. Teacher says, I know this to be true. Kids will surprise you, but that you will not be surprised if there's no expectations of work or to push a little bit. It's always amazing when I drive through my neighborhood and I see adults cutting the grass when I know they have teen kids. What are they doing? I made a lot of money as a teenager cutting grass, shoveling snow in snowstorms. Cash money. Cash is king. $10 cutting grass went a long way in 1974. And maybe the price has gone up. I don't know what you would do. Somebody knows if their teen's cutting grass, what that goes for now. $40? $50? Big yard? Those half-acre properties out in Delafield and Brookfield and Waukesha County? I guess the message is, start thinking about this stuff. If you complain your kid is lackadaisical or underperforming or disappointing or tired all the time, well, examine the schedule. You'd be surprised what a great job, a great experience, meeting other people that aren't their family, much as we love our families. It's a mistake to think we have the answers for everything. We have every ability to communicate with our kids in ways that enhance them. Sometimes you need a different viewpoint. Shelter in place, I don't know if that's working for kids, especially when they spend all their time on social media. Quick break.
Well, the clouds are clearing, and I think we're over the storm.
Oh, you got to love the weather in Wisconsin. It's beautiful out. Get outside. Take a radio or a smartphone so you can listen to the show. Kristen should be back tomorrow, hopefully. Thanks for taking the time. A couple things, real quick. We got Dave Spano coming up at the top of the hour. We'll ask him about some of this workforce stuff because I think there's a lot of uncertainty there as well. Iran, Straits of Hormuz, always an interesting topic with Dave. And just where the numbers are going, higher gas prices, more expensive to shop, buy, ship. Airline prices, we just booked a trip for later this fall, and I'd say it's at least 25% higher to travel than it was, say, 6 to 8 months ago. Consumer debt exploding. So we'll get to all that with Dave Spano from Annex Wealth Management, and then Clessa Morgan's going to join us to talk about what impact that decision by the legislature to not get stuff done when it comes to tax relief means for education, including special needs funding, which is a big part. And I've heard from school board members, many of them, who are extremely disappointed in the legislature. Pass that on with your votes this November or in the primary in August. If you didn't get a chance, do it. Make a point to do it today. Subscribe to our newsletter on Extra Points. Extra Points, Point Taken, is the show. It's a once-a-week read. We put it on a Memorial Day yesterday. How cool was that? It had a lot of Memorial Day content as well. We featured some of the stuff that I did last week on Salute to Service. Thanks to all of our honorees for sharing their stories and the nominators who are also part of that story, many who joined us in studio. Love that week every year, Heroes Week. And thanks to Waterstone Bank and Mission 94 for making it possible. All available on our website at WTMD.com. So if you want to get the newsletter, just text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A, to 855-616-1620. You won't be disappointed. We've got some sponsorship news coming up pretty soon, where we'll have a sponsor for the newsletter. We have great content, bonus content, what we're up to, some recommendations, just fun stuff that we find, shows I watch, books I read, stuff that Kristen's up to away from the show and on the show. We give you a little synopsis of all the week's shows if you want to re-listen to something. Text the word extra, E-X-T-R-A, to 855-616-1620. Hope to have a Packers contest. Hope marketing's listening. A Packers contest for new subscribers to the newsletter coming up this summer. Still work on that. Might even be my seats. How about that? Like to sit in my seats? That might be available for you for current or new subscribers. So we'll run that through marketing and see what they have to say. All right, stick around for another hour of Point Taken. Have you noticed a musical theme yet? Pay attention. It's pretty obvious. Celebrating America. More ways than one. News is next on 620 WTMJ.
Let's begin with your Monday market preview with Annex Wealth Management CEO Dave Spano on Point Taken.
I almost wanted to say Brian Jacobs is on vacation, but Dave Spano is joining us. I'm just teasing you, Dave.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Nice to see you. How's everything going?
I am great on this Tuesday. I always got to remember that, you know, it's not Monday. All right. So I sent you a bunch of ideas, but I mean, there's inflation numbers coming out this week, GDP numbers. I spent a little time in the last half hour talking about teen employment. Let's start with jobs. Do you see this country as a plus, neutral, negative on just the general jobs outlook for the year?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? Because it goes to really how it's divided. And I think a lot of times we generalize our thinking. And, you know, you and I spent a lot of time talking about what's called a K-shaped economy, right? And I think just to revisit again for yep. someone who may have not heard it, is you've got two parts of the K. Think about the two letters. The letter and the two parts of the curve would be there are people who are participating and there are people who are not. And that has certainly caught on a lot of attention. But here I'm going to introduce another idea that is really a different way to look at it and probably more accurate. And instead of a K-shaped economy, we have an E-shaped economy.
Three legs. Okay.
And that is really, I think, an easier way to answer your question, right, is there are three parts that there's the upper income, there's the middle income, and there's the lower income. And it really depends where you are on that strata and, of course, where you are for your skill set and for your education to answer that question. So if you have more education and you have a higher skill set, you're more employable than the other.
If you look at, for example, the teen thing I was talking about, do you worry that we have 200, almost 300,000 less teens working this summer as worked like three summers ago?
Yeah. I mean, that's not great, right? But the fact is, and some of them are truly, honestly looking for a job. You know, there's a lot of service jobs that are available, or, you know, there's only so many lawns to cut and so on. But especially for the teens, that is an issue. But there's things that can happen, but that's not just for the teens. I mean, there's recent graduates, ask them about their opportunity to get a job. I mean, some are sending out 100 resumes and maybe getting one or two even callbacks. So that's just not just for teens. That is for people who are, and I was making the explanation of the more education you get, that unemployment rate should go down. And the fact of the matter is it's still a very difficult environment right now, even for people with education. But let me go back to this idea of an E-shaped economy, Steve.
Yep.
So one of the ways to look at it is consumer sentiment. And there's a University of Michigan study. And, when Trump's last year, 2019, pre-COVID, it was over 100, and it continued to decline. And then since he's been in, it's declined more. And so, when you get to an all-time low on consumer sentiment, that's where we are right now.
We are at the all-time low.
All-time low. So you go, where do we go? Why that doesn't square up? And it could be, who knows, blame the media, blame social media, whatever you want to do. real consumer spending has never been higher. So that is not squaring. So people are kicking ass, excuse me. People are doing well. The economy's doing well. The markets are up at all-time highs. You know, you and I joked about 50,000. I said it's going to get there.
Yep. And it got there a couple times. Yeah.
And so we're over it today. So that consumer sentiment as an all-time low does not coordinate with the U.S. consumer spending at an all-time high unless you put it through the lens of there's people who are spending on this E-shaped economy,
right?
There's the top, the middle, and the lower end.
Could it be, and this seems simplistic, but it's just different generations, different lifestyle choices. People want to do stuff. Often, this is speculation, regardless of their personal economic situation, their household budget.
I agree with that. So but part of that is, you know, everybody wants to talk about experiences over things, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen that. That's not something new, but it's been the momentum here for a number of years that people want to do that. And so your people are going outside of their economic strata to go out to whatever. They're going out to a concert or out to dinner or perhaps to a bar. That might be outside of their ability to do that, but they're doing it anyways because it's part of the experience.
You talk to a lot of CEOs. You are a CEO. What are they sharing with you? What are their worries? What are their outlooks?
The outlook is cautious right now, and depends. Again, this depends the CEO.
Yes.
If the CEO
and the industry they work in.
In the industry, right? So if you are making, if you're building data centers, you can't keep up, right? And by the way, I drove up 43 recently. That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It just goes on.
The
and
scope
on and
of
on.
It is. It's astronomical, yeah.
Right. But I guess it really depends on where you're at in the economy that you're in. If you're in financial services, you're doing great. If you're in law for the most part, right, you're doing pretty well. I mean, you can see lawyers are continuing to raise their rates. We're seeing across the industry. So it really depends on where you are. So our CEOs that we talk to are happy with where they are. They're profitable. They've reduced their debt. They're just somewhat cautious. I do think that over this weekend, and I had a conversation with a number of folks this weekend, they thought if we were getting to a solution to the Iranian conflict.
Geopolitics,
that it would make a major difference. Now, we're going into the summer. People generally feel better during the summer years, but then we're going to get into the political season at the end of the summer, and all of this may come to fruition. Now, if we get a resolution to this conflict, look for interest rates to moderate. Look for oil prices to come down, and that'll make people feel better.
All right, we'll take another break here. Dave's going to stick around. We'll get his look ahead. And also got to remind you about a couple great Annex events. These Instant Insight webinars are fantastic. They break down the latest job report. It's coming on June 5th, 9 a.m. You just click events at annexwealth.com. Set your reminder. You don't want to miss these things. They're really great analysis of current events when it comes to your dollars and our economy. And then a great one, Women in Wealth series, saving the family cottage. Keep the peace, create a smooth transition. That's a big topic right now, hot topic. June 18th, 6 to 8, Annex's awesome headquarters in Brookfield. Been there many times. Click events also at annexwealth.com. And while you're there, click the Get Started button. Also a good opportunity to check out your financial future, or at least put you on the right path. Take a quick break. Dave Spano, CEO at Annex Wealth Management, after this. Dave Spano, CEO at Annex Wealth Management, joining us as he does most Mondays, but of course yesterday was a holiday, so he's joining us on Tuesday. And Dave, what are you looking at this week? Where's your razor sharp mind looking at as far as what you do?
Yeah, for sure we're looking at earnings, and Micron Technology, they reported today. We expected it to be a blowout number, and it is indeed. It's up about 17% this morning already. And just to get a perspective on this, there's one of the brokerage firms, you know, they have analysts there, UBS. They had a stock price that they raised it from $535 to, get this, $1,625.
Wow.
price, $1,625. It's trading at $870 or so right now, up $130 this morning. So why? Because they're in the chip business, and so there's demand there. But here's the flip side of that. We all know that there's the AI story. Costco is going to report, and we expect them to have really good numbers as well. And a lot of conversation, you know, that we've talked about is, where's the economy going? Well, the biggest measure of the health of the economy is the GDP report. Again, Atlanta now, GDP now is suggesting that we're going to continue to have a 3 to 4% GDP. So that's a long ways away from a recession. If you have positive GDP numbers, of course, everybody now knows that you have to have back-to-back quarters of negative GDP, and that is nowhere in the cards. And number two, that inflation, you know, even though it's higher than the Fed's goal of 2%, about 3 to 3.5% is kind of the estimate in the near term. So those two things are at least baked in, and the market understands what's in front of us.
Dave, you talk a lot about balanced portfolios on your Saturday program right here on 620 WTMJ, and I get this question a lot. Kristen gets it sometimes through email or text. Obviously, balance matters. How do you factor in the sort of the rise of AI and high tech and into a properly balanced portfolio? Because it's something that's on everyone's mind. A lot of people talk about the impact on the workforce, but there's an investment side of that story as well. And
for
the most part, they're doing pretty well.
Yeah. So, you know, the way we build portfolios is there's a core part of your portfolio, and we go, why is it built that way? Well, you tell us, you know, the assets that you have, the tolerance for risk, right? What kind of volatility that you can put up with, and what your goals are, and then we'll build a portfolio. And so this, to make it really easy to understand, let's just say at the end of this conversation, we think that it's going to be a moderate portfolio. Most people are somewhere in the middle, right? So 60% equities as the old school way of thinking about it, and 40% in non-equities. And so if you do that, we look at the equities in part, and we say, what's the core? Well, about two-thirds of that core should be balanced the way the S&P 500 looks. Then you get to answer your question around that. That's the tactical part. Can you overweight tactically in some of these ideas that are working? And remember, just because you had a couple of quarters in a row doesn't mean it's a long-term, it's going to be to have long-term demand. But think about things that are resilient sectors. And you're asking about AI, but the resilient sectors in the core, people are always going to need health care. They're always going to need staples like food and household goods and so on. And they're always going to need their utilities. They need the power on, right? So those are parts of your core. And then tactically you build it around it and saying, we think that chips or data centers or whatever else, that's how you overweight it, and that's how you build the portfolio.
So often I hear from young adult who are now in the workforce, they're post their college experience, and they say, well, we can't afford to save. What do you say? You run a company that is a financial planner for all levels of our society. Mm-hmm. I don't like that when they say that, because I started small. You can start small. What do you say to those folks?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the easiest way to start is if you work for a company, and the example you're using, it's a young graduate who's worked for a company. Most companies have 401k plans or something similar to that, you know, some type of tax advantage plan. Start right there, you know, even if it's just a small part of your check, because you remember that's pre-tax. And so if you contribute in your 401k plan, you start with pre-tax, the company generally matches that. And so those two things, that match is free money in some extent, and then it grows tax deferred. So you get pre-tax, you get tax deferral, and all of those things are a tax advantage way, and that's the way to start. Because for the general American, you know, they're going to have their house, they're going to have some assets, and then a big chunk is when they're done working is they have a big 401k plan that's intended to help replace their paycheck.
It's interesting because only 50% of households under 35 participate in 401k plans, but a lot higher percentage of those young Americans work.
Yeah,
I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's education. I mean, it's education and lifestyle, and we have to, as financial planners, you know, and we have a lot of 401k plans that we manage. If you're listening to this and you say, well, I'm not getting the education, we have an amazing team. Steve, you've met Tom Parks.
Yep.
He's as good as they get as educated team members. And he goes out to the companies and he tells them, he's funny, he's engaging. He's a multilingual person, so he can talk to lots of audiences. But that's the reason why we want to get them involved. You know, and the last thing you know we talk about is concern they have about AI, that they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs.
Right, yeah.
You know, so there is no evidence of that yet. And it really goes back to where we started this conversation. What sector are you in? There's jobs that AI is not going to take. They're not going to take, if you're installing in agriculture and production and transportation and personal care and, you know, food services, on and on and on.
Landscaping? Yes,
landscaping, all of that, right? Yeah. But there's certainly going to have some effect in business and finance and law, computers and math, all of that. You know, hopefully it's an enhancer and not a takes jobs away. And, you know, we've heard this conversation before, a lot of comparisons to 1999. And so we'll have to see if this is true and if this really is an enhancer and not a negative part.
Dave Spano, Annex Wealth Management CEO. Always great hanging out, especially on a Tuesday.
Yeah, love it. Thanks.
All right. Catch you next week. Quick break here on 620 WTMJ. Point taken. Love that song, America. All right, coming up next. I haven't seen this guy in a while. Where's he been? Doing hard work. City Ford Collective Executive Director Kalestin Morgan's going to join us. And I'm going to ask him the question that I was talking about earlier, this connection between the state not doing what they're supposed to be doing, which is provide tax relief and education funding. Hello, tax relief bill that went down in flames. We'll ask him about that question because that's a big deal. Wisconsinites, voters wondering why not, why it didn't happen, and what the fallout impact future holds for education without that desperately needed help. It doesn't have to be just about money, and that's the great thing about Kalestin. He'll walk through some things to reshape. And if you missed our great podcast, Videology Podcast, Kalestin Morgan and Dr. Howard Fuller, check it out on the podcast page, WTMJ.com, including Dr. Howard Fuller's idea about an educational Marshall Plan. Blew me away. And his take on where education is going in Wisconsin and beyond. Fascinating conversation.
It's time for some forward thinking on Point Taken. Brought to you by City Forward Collective, focusing on education in Milwaukee.
Always great to visit with my friend, Kalestin Morgan Jr., Executive Director, City Forward Collective. And, you know, I set up this conversation by talking about the failed bill, but this polling that comes out, you and I were chatting during the break. It's telling us what Wisconsinites, voters, residents, constituents are thinking about this stuff, including education.
Absolutely. I am not surprised. We had done some polling earlier this month. I know we'll spend some time talking about it, but we got to start with the news of the day. And I'm not surprised that voters across the board, you know, actually thought that this was a good deal because, you know, while no compromise is perfect and, you know, the policy wonk in me gets some of the concerns about the deficit down the line, people are feeling the pain right now. And what we were finding is people wanted relief on property taxes and people want to see smart investments, but are willing to make investments in our kids. And this deal would have done both of those things.
So is there a next step when you have a rejection by the legislature? I don't think so in this current version of the legislature.
I mean, who knows at this point, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, like everything is going every which way. Like these are the types of numbers that should make, you know, the legislature take note, right? The governor got this right. This is a tough spot to be in. And this is across the board, majorities of Republicans, independents, Democrats, any part of the state you look at, you know, this isn't breaking down on partisan lines.
Did the pushback surprise you?
Yes and no, right? You know, I spent enough time in and around the Capitol. You know, there had been conversations about this deal coming together since February. You know, some of the particulars have shifted a little bit here and there. But what surprised me is that they let this thing run for this long and still didn't get it over the line. You think if you're going to hold it for 3 or 4 more months, that's because you're wrangling up
with
the
coalition they had.
Exactly. You know, what ended up playing out in May, you know, from every indication, could have happened just as well in February. And frankly, I think they may have had more ability to get this thing done earlier before, you know, all of the principals had lame ducked themselves when, you know, there were still other pieces of legislation. You know, by this point, sort of became an all or nothing proposition.
I heard from school board members, even a school board president, the special needs piece was a big part of the reason school board members and presidents and community supported this.
This is one on K-12 education in particular. You're not going to find anyone in the education space on any side of this issue. You know, you know, we've had lots of conversations about Dr. Casillas and the work she's doing at MPS.
We'll
you
get
know,
to that.
I've been a supporter in some places. This is one where she got it exactly right. This was real dollars for real kids in real classrooms this year that got turned down. Getting the 50% special education has been something that Democrats in particular have been talking about for, you know, a decade or more. Like, this was a real missed opportunity to get real resources to our kids, especially our kids who need it. And there, you're not going to find a district, a public charter, a private school in the city that wasn't supportive of this.
Everybody knows Alan Borsick. He writes on education, has a great column this week. And I'm paraphrasing, but it takes more than money. We're just talking about the money side to fix this issue.
Absolutely. Look, I was just saying, you know, all of us would have appreciated the additional resources for students with special education needs and just in general. All of us are seeing, you know, MPS is going up to finish their budget. I believe the final vote on that is this week, Thursday, right? The timing on this matters. And so when you hear people saying we'll deal with this 6 months from now, 9 months from now, those budgets are getting locked in as we speak. And that's part of the reason you're hearing the backlash from the education part of the world be so loud and vociferous on what happened.
If you take the money out, which is not possible, but if you take the money out, what are we talking about? What's some of these things? I know low teacher morale is part of that story.
Yeah. Look, the state has been stagnant on education. A couple of weeks ago, it's been a while since we've chatted, we got this education recovery scorecard. I actually think it came out the same week that the bill failed. And it showed Wisconsin 30th, you know, in the bottom five of states there, I think 30th or 35 in math and 33rd or 38 in reading in terms of progress since 2025. And I use that term progress loosely because we actually flatline. Milwaukee was actually in the bottom 200 of more than 10,000 districts that they looked at, and Milwaukee's black students in the bottom 20. So when we talk about educational stagnation at the state level, a crisis that, you know, we have talked about this time and time again, you know, you and I, Steve, you know, we have to do better by our students academically, and resources are part of that equation. Absolutely. Yes. But it also requires us to do the work that we need to do to ensure that we got great teachers in front of our classrooms, that we're working on things like delivering high quality reading instruction to our youngest learners, and that we're.
I was just going to ask you what are some of the things that reading thing is so key.
It absolutely is, and this is one where, you know, there are resources. Like, we passed Act 23 years ago now, you know, and there has been an unprecedented effort. You know, I'm a part of it, but there have been a large number of people, again, across the board. You're not going to find, you know, anyone in the who's an educator in the city that's not supportive of the efforts of the Milwaukee Reading Coalition and more broadly the efforts to ensure that our kids are getting high quality reading instruction.
Gleason Morgan, Executive Director, City Forward Collective. He's sticking around for another segment. I haven't seen him in a while. We got a lot to catch up on, including MPS. You alluded to it or you talked about it. Where they're going, why that's a big part of the story. And more after this on 620 WTMJ. Quick break. Hanging out with Gleason Morgan. He's executive director of City Forward Collective. All right. So we were talking about polling. You guys do a lot of polling. You do a lot of research on education. What are your numbers telling you? What are people thinking about? What's the sort of the takeaways?
Yeah. So we were out in the field a little bit earlier this month, last few days of April, right at the beginning of May. And, you know, we walked away, we did a statewide poll, 1,600 or so responses. So, you know, a little bit different than what we normally do, which is just in Milwaukee. And I'd say three big headlines, right? The first is some deep, deep concerns about K-12 education. We're talking about that education recovery scorecard, not just in Milwaukee, but across the state.
Everywhere.
93% of respondents said that they were concerned that kids weren't being prepared for the future. 92% said they were concerned about academic outcomes. So some real deep concerns broadly in terms of what's going on for our students.
When you see numbers like that, I mean, that's universal. It's hard to get polling that high. First, 80%
absolutely
is good. 92%, 93%. That's telling you something.
We'll leave the Marquette Law poll, but like just like that, like there's a signal here. And, you know, it gets to the broader point that I would raise. You know, our respondents aren't hearing what they want to hear from elected officials and candidates for office on K-12 education. You know, let me take two issues, accountability and school choice. First on accountability, we found 80% support for a candidate who would, you know, increase accountability for all publicly funded students. This is, again, a cross-cutting issue, Republican, Democrat, Independent, don't care where you are in the state. We've talked about it in Milwaukee before, but this is a real matter of statewide concern. And it's not just pointing the finger one way or the other. It is all of us are concerned that all of our kids aren't getting the education that they need to be prepared to thrive in the future. And something needs to be done.
I hate this.
Yeah,
I'm going to put this question. I'm going to ask it anyway. If you had the magic wand, what's the one way you make the connection on that? So people are the kids are learning doing all the other things we talked about, the money and the low morale and all the things that are plaguing education, how do you make that, how do you start that connection?
Look, to me, accountability is about two pieces, right? And we do one okay in Wisconsin, the transparency piece. We test all of our students, including publicly yes. funded students in private schools. We report those results. I can tell you a lot about what's going on. The second piece, however, is where we fall short. It's in action, right? When the numbers tell us something is going wrong, when the numbers tell us fewer than one in five students on the north side of Milwaukee is reading, writing, and doing math on grade level, we don't do anything. And that's nearly across the board. We don't do anything in our public district schools. We don't do anything in our private schools. And that's true across the state, right? We report there's transparency. What the voters want us to get to is to actually taking action. And I want to be really clear here. That doesn't mean getting rid of school choice. This is another one where we found a 50-point difference in how undecided Democratic voters, you know, who are looking to vote in that primary, feel about the school choice issue versus, let's call them the committed partisans, the ones who had already picked their candidates. It was a 57% support issue overall. This is a state that supports high-quality school choices. And so when I say we need more accountability, that's not accountability as a backdoor to get rid of the options that families right. have. That's accountability to ensure that all of those options, whether they are district schools like MPS, whether they are public charter schools, whether they are private schools, that they are high quality, that they're doing the job for kids, and that when they aren't, you know, we take action, we intervene, we provide supports. But at the end of the day, something has to happen when year after year students are persisting, because our kids get one shot at this. And so we got to do the best we can for them.
One of the things that Howard Fuller mentioned when we had him on the podcast, Videology Podcast, you can find it at WTMJ.com, is we need a Marshall Plan for education. Speak to that a little bit, because I thought it was a brilliant idea from someone who's been around education for so long.
Look, far be it for me to say anything but anything behind Dr. Fuller except amen, but he was absolutely right on this point, right? We have invested deeply in ensuring that our kids have high-quality options across the board. What we haven't done is thought about in a system where one in two kids in Milwaukee now is educated outside of Milwaukee public schools. We were talking earlier about reading. We could be talking about things like chronic absenteeism and ensuring our kids are in school every day. I was talking before about the education recovery scorecard. Whatever the challenge is, we're not going to solve it just by pointing fingers at Milwaukee public schools. We're not going to solve it just by ignoring Milwaukee public schools. We've got to work on these issues together. And I think that's what Dr. Fuller was speaking to, right? I think I've heard him say in other places, we've got a 21st century education system that's built on some 20th century infrastructure. We need to upgrade the infrastructure.
We mentioned the MPS vote Thursday, I believe.
Yes.
What are you hoping to hear there, or what's the takeaway?
Look, we've had a lot to say about the challenge at Milwaukee Public Schools. What I'm most excited about is that on the fiscal side, it does seem like the House is getting in order, right? They at least have a handle on the challenges. And, you know, the budget that's being put forth seems, from our observations, to be pretty fiscally responsible. I want to be clear, there are bigger challenges to come, right? This was closing the $46 million deficit that they have this year. It looks like they've done it, but there's still a $400 million plus deficit to come over the next 5 years. So tough decisions lie ahead, but this is at least a good omen that if nothing else, you know, for the first time while we can trust the numbers, and that there's some seriousness of purpose, both from the superintendent administration and from the board, to actually get this done.
Klessen Morgan, executive director of City Forward Collective. Don't be a stranger, man. 3 weeks.
I know. We'll look forward to more of these over the summer.
All right. Always enjoy the conversation. It's wisdom on education. You don't hear everywhere, so this is why we do it on 620 WTMJ. Quick and final break after this. Alas, my time is up on this Tuesday edition of Point Taken. Kristen-less Tuesday edition. We'll see if she's back tomorrow. Texture actually had an interesting topic idea. I may do this tomorrow, especially if I'm by myself, because, you know, got to think of things to talk about. Kristen's always got things on her mind. She's a busy mom and, of course, working for the Journal Sentinel and WTMJ. Did you notice this? I'm just going to put it out there because I'm not going to pass judgment until I get your thoughts. Less people flying the American flag on Memorial Day. Did you notice that? Because in my neighborhood, it was pretty good. My neighbor Dennis had four large flags out right around the corner. So I saw quite a few in mine. We had our flag out front. And if not flying the flag, is it a conscious decision? Or actually, what is the reason why you wouldn't fly the flag on a day where we're remembering those men and women who sacrificed for us to have the freedoms, have the country, of all the things that we benefit from in this great country that is America. So I just, it's a curious and a curiosity for me, because I think you should fly the flag. But if you have a thought, you can weigh in today. Maybe I'll get to it tomorrow on the busy Wednesday program. I've got a speaking engagement before the for the show tomorrow, so I'll be wearing a suit, or at least a suit coat. I'm not a tie guy anymore. Maybe that's the late in life change that I've been looking for as a guy who wore a lot of ties and a lot of suits throughout his various work lives. Thanks for listening to the show today. It was sort of a broad range of topics. I'm going to go back to one of our first conversations with Charles Franklin, the executive director of the MU Law School poll. And Bill McCosha weighed in and said, great interview, and I appreciate that. It is a conversation that I wish I didn't have to have, because that was a slam dunk. Why do I say that? Because 80% of Wisconsinites polled think it was a slam dunk. You don't get those opportunities that often. And it's, again, it's the difference between a talker and a doer. We got a lot of talkers running for office. Hell, we got a lot of talkers in office. But as I'm going to talk about to a group tomorrow morning related to transportation, getting stuff done is important. And the communication piece, very important, but that's only part of the story. You got to finish the job. You got to get the work done, and you actually do your damn job. So a little lesson, life lesson for all those folks looking at the issues of the day. Be back tomorrow. News is next, 620 WTMJ.